Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style. At Marisa's, we're here to help you show up feeling your best, no matter what's on your calendar. Whether it's a date night, a special event, or just another Tuesday, our over 800 stylists are here to help. From tried and true denim to head-turning looks, we've got style that fits your life and your budget. Visit your local Maurice's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
Yeah, you're right. Highs of 89 today and dry like it has been. Same thing for tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day. No chance for showers really until Wednesday, and the lawn is getting dried out. But it grew so much during the summertime, and I got so tired of cutting grass, I'm letting it. Dub Lane joins us now. Walter Dub Lane, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at UNO, my alma mater. How you doing, Dub?
Hey, good morning, Tommy. I'm fine.
Let's talk about this federal shutdown and Obamacare tax credit. Whenever you say Obamacare tax credit, it generates, I guess, some kind of political reaction, or you could call it Affordable Care Act tax credit. Explain to me what that is, please. Oh, the premium tax credit, I guess, especially.
Right. The Obamacare, it did two main things to try to get more people with insurance. One is they expanded Medicaid. You know, John Bel Edwards did that in Louisiana, which put another 400,000 to 500,000 people onto Medicaid.
Boy, wait, let me just jump in for one second, Dub. To be factual about that, that was like you get three federal dollars for every one you spend, or was it even more than that?
Well, it's more than that. For the newly enrolled, the federal government paid for 90% of the thing. That the state only had to come up with 10%. So for every dollar the state money we spend, we get nine federal dollars.
That's what I thought it was, but I wasn't sure. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but that went to people that are up to 126% of the federal poverty line. If you are slightly above that, let's say that's around 32,000-33,000 for a family of four. If you made 35,000 to 36,000, then you probably still couldn't afford insurance, but you'd be left out. So he created these individual markets. Which again allowed people. Now again, if people couldn't get insurance through their employer, they were gig workers or self-employed or other things like that.
Small businesses.
Small businesses, exactly. They could then go buy individual insurance policies through private companies, but they were heavily subsidized. So the people in that range, from about 35,000 to 45,000, could pretty much get insurance that was premium free. They didn't have to pay any premiums for it. Then as you went up the income level up to 400% of the federally poverty line, which again is around $90,000, $100,000 income, then the subsidies kind of went away. Well, then came the COVID, and during the pandemic, we had a couple of laws that enhanced those credits, which extended it to more people with higher incomes and also subsidized higher up the income ladder. So people making $50,000, $60,000 were getting basically premium-free insurance. That enhancement, and they did it through tax subsidies, but that's a technicality. It basically, pays for the insurance. The enhancement,
it was a credit, a tax credit, Dub, is what it was?
Yes, a tax credit, exactly.
Which means not, and for people who don't know, it's not a deduction. It's a credit. It comes right off. Go ahead.
It's a credit, yes. Yeah. That, which is important. You're right. That's an important point. But that those enhancements expire at the end of 2025. So the question is, what will happen to people? The estimates are that all of a sudden insurance that has been heavily subsidized, you can still buy it. It's just a lot of people now won't be able to afford it because the premiums have been heavily subsidized under Obamacare and even more so under Biden's, policies during the pandemic. And so there's an estimate that says in Louisiana about the number of uninsured might increase by as much as 20% because of people that could still qualify to buy insurance but won't be able to afford it because of the subsidies going away.
So when we talk about the subsidies going away, can you break it down to what income group would be affected and how many people, percentage of population that would be?
Well, I don't have the exact breakdowns.
But roughly.
I was trying to get that. The best I could find was that about, that the unemployment rate, the uninsured rate will go up. Now, it amounts to the people, basically it's going to be the people. People still down at the very low end of the scale would, under the original Obamacare, would still get pretty much free premiums. It's really when you get people up to the middle income areas, $50,000, $60,000, that will then be losing some of their subsidies, and their prices will go up, and they're staking. Some people will say, well, I just can't afford that, and they'll stop buying insurance.
Is that 50 or 60 household or 50 or 60 household or individual, Dub?
We're talking about that. I'm using that number as a family of four.
Okay.
Obviously, for individuals, the scales are a little bit different, but I find it an easy reference point.
Sure.
Whereas, so people in that range for a family of four. If you're a single person, then you drop that down considerably.
Let me take a break, and we'll pick it up here when we come back because we've got to stop for traffic. One takeaway I had from this article I'm reading was that people, mandate aside, because we all know what happened with the mandate, right? But it would seem as though that if insurance was affordable, that people would buy it. And then people are buying it, but if this goes away, then that means it's not going to be affordable and people aren't going to buy it. And then we'll talk about what happens because nothing's free, right? Somebody's got to pay for something. We'll talk about that when we come back. Dub Lane is our guest, Walter Dub Lane. I'm an associate professor of economics and finance at my alma mater. I'm proud to say UNO, and he's our go-to guy when it comes to things as it relates to the healthcare industry economically. 621 traffic, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Walter Dub Lane, associate professor of economics and finance at UNO, my alma mater. And we're talking about if the Obamacare Affordable Care Act tax credits go away, they were expanded during COVID. About 92,000 people in Louisiana could lose health insurance that they are currently, Dub, correct me if I'm wrong, paying for, correct? But it's subsidized.
Right. They have to pay. The way that it works is that the key word in the law is affordable. And what it said was that nobody should, the applicable people shouldn't have to pay more than about 9% of their income for their premium. And so, that's whatever the premium was, the Fed basically paid the rest of your premium. You only had to pay 9%. The expansion that happened during the COVID reduced that number from 9% down to, I think, 6 or 7%, something like that.
So I guess what I said before,
the subsidy went up.
what I said before the break is, to me, what I took away from this is, forget about mandates about having to buy insurance, although I get the actuarial part of that and the money part of that, but it seems like people will buy insurance if it is affordable. Is that a misnomer, or is that a mistake on my part to think
that? No, that seems, I would say that's correct.
Okay, so along those lines, let's say these people do lose their insurance coverage, nothing's free, what happens then?
Well, again, then they don't get their primary care, and they, you know, go to the emergency room when they're sick, and then the rest of us end up paying for it in higher premiums for our Blue Cross type of policies. That's how it usually gets passed along to everybody through higher premiums.
Because I get a text that says the subsidy that President Biden put on during the pandemic should end. The pandemic has been over quite a while now. But this is not about the pandemic. This is about making health care. I just want to keep people focused on what we're talking about here. This is about making insurance affordable for people, correct? Not necessarily about the pandemic. This was a side effect of...
I would say that is a correct statement, is that the original Obamacare was intended to make it affordable. The pandemic, because of COVID and all these other things, wanted to say, well, let's make it more affordable. So that's why those were temporary. So for those to go away, I'm not saying that's a bad policy. It's just saying if they do, we can predict that a lot of people will not be able to buy insurance anymore.
So I guess what I was trying to...
The right amount of subsidy is really, obviously a political question. But it is true that the enhancements were done because of the pandemic, and the pandemic is over. So there is a logic that says that, yes, so those subsidies should go away.
But you could also say that as a result of that, we found that if insurance is affordable with an additional subsidy, that people will buy it, to wit, 92,000 people in Louisiana. And if that goes away, then these people will not have insurance, will not buy insurance, which means then they go to the emergency room and then you and I wind up paying for that. Accurate?
Yes.
Okay. That's the only point I was trying to make, that it was an offshoot of COVID, and I get the logic of, okay, it was put in effect for, it was almost discovered by serendipity. Would that be accurate?
I don't know. You could argue it a couple different ways. Some conservatives were saying that the progressives and the Democrats are always looking to, give away more stuff, and this was just an excuse to give away more stuff.
But either way,
ways of looking at it.
Either way, people still are going to seek health care when they're sick, and somebody's got to pay for that. So if they go to the emergency room, which is the most expensive delivery system, that cost gets passed along to those that are currently maybe insured. That's accurate?
Yes, but yeah, indirectly, yes.
One way or the other, I guess is what I'm saying.
And part of it, though, but remember that part of it is that, yes, some of those costs will be shared in terms of higher premiums for everybody else, but most of it will be shared by people who are sick and don't get the help they need.
Right. And then the other side of it is that with federal subsidies, we're paying for it that way as well.
Right.
Okay. And maybe the end result is that if we pay for it and people are healthier, maybe it's better. I don't know. We'll see. 6:30. Thank you, Dub. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 6:39. You ever see these commercials for these pharmaceutical medicines, and then they tell you, like, for example, if the medicine is Blonorex, they say, do not take Blonorex if you are allergic to Blonorex.
A lawyer told them they had to say that.
But if you're allergic, why would you take? I can understand, do not take Blonorex if you're allergic to this, or if you
Obviously, if you're taking
the other thing. But
someone must have had a successful claim and took something they were allergic to because no one told them not to.
But you know you're allergic to it, and you're going to take it anyway?
Are you trying to apply logic to legal rulings?
At some point, you got to be responsible for your own stupidity, don't you?
You would think so, but obviously some lawyer convinced some court.
Well, in that case, let me protect myself, Dave, by telling you, if you're allergic to Blonorex, do not take Blonorex.
Right. And if you're allergic to listening to the radio, I guess, don't.
Keep listening to the radio.
Yes, that, exactly. Yeah.
Suck it up.
Rub some dirt on it. Walk it off.
Exactly. We'll be all right. We'll take a break, come back, talk about, are you loyal to your car insurance company or not?
No, I absolutely do not care. Whoever's the cheapest is who I'm going with.
I've been with State Farm for years and years and years, and I'm terrified of making a claim, but I just don't want to change it. So we'll talk about that when we come back here on WWL. 6:46, 14 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on this Wednesday morning, September the 17th, and hurricane season so far treating us very nicely. We're going to talk about that with Barry Keim, as a matter of fact, at 8:15 about the Azores High, something like that. The only thing I know about the Azores is that poem about Columbus. We're going to talk about car insurance now, and I'll ask you to text the Oakmont Jeweler Talking text line. No texting and driving, because you don't want to get in a wreck and have insurance rates go even higher. Are you loyal to your insurance company, or do you shop around for insurance rates when it comes to auto insurance? Joining us now to help moderate the discussion is Shannon Martin, Bankrate insurance expert. Good morning, Shannon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. Good morning.
I said before we went on the air, before you came on, rather, that I've been loyal to State Farm. I got everything with State Farm, and I've had a couple of scrapes with the car, and I've been afraid to notify them. Either didn't get it fixed or paid for it myself, which is just foolish when you look at how much insurance I pay that I'm terrified to use it. Is that old school thinking, and has the thinking on that changed? What's happening in the car insurance industry?
Well, it is a common thought. You know, you want to stay loyal to the carrier who you feel has been loyal to you. But customer loyalty may really be a thing of the past. J.D. Power just came out with their annual study, and they found that 57% of policyholders are shopping for a new policy this year, and that's much higher than the years of the past. And I actually was at the Louisiana Department of Insurance Convention in August, and that was a topic of conversation. They say, you know, if you've been with the same carrier for 10, 15 years, you might be paying too much for insurance.
How do you draw the line between shopping around and finding somebody new, and then you go to get somebody new, and then you find out they're not what they were supposed to be, and then you want to go back? Will they take you back, or how hard is it? I know. I guess what frightens me here, Shannon, is we're going through this thing with home insurance, where if you got home insurance with somebody, you may not want to fool with it, because maybe you might not find somebody new to write it, but it's completely different as it relates to auto insurance, right? And that's because of, I would guess, maybe national competition, or what?
It is different, and you have an excellent point. When people read our new Bankrate article about this topic, or if they look at reports, if you live in Louisiana, Florida, California, you kind of are an exception to the rule, because there is something to be said about staying with maybe a broker who understands you and understands your risk. But on the other hand, you know, for example, we'll use State Farm just as an example here. If you have the same State Farm agent, they may always give you great service. But if State Farm, the company, makes a decision to not insure within an area, there's nothing your agent can really do for you. And by not shopping around, you might see that you might miss out on discounts or rates that other carriers can give you. Home is a little bit different. People feel safer keeping their home with one company. But legislation has changed lately that carriers can cancel you even if you've had them for over the past 3 years. So the rules are kind of changing the game. And shopping doesn't mean you have to move carriers. It just means you're investigating to make sure you're still getting the best rate.
I don't know if this is in your pilot's cabin or wheelhouse or not, but we just had a discussion about medical insurance and subsidies and everything else. Medical insurance is not competitive state to state. Accurate?
I apologize. That is not my wheelhouse. I am.
No, because I guess what I was saying is it would seem as though if it was, then we would have as competitive a market for medical insurance as we do for auto insurance, because the risk would be maybe spread out or something. When it comes to these auto insurance companies and you look at the advertising budget, be it the Aflac duck or the, and we were having a conversation about this the other day, remembering what insurance company, some of the commercials are so clever, you don't know what insurance company they're for.
Exactly.
Does that bump the rates up, or when it comes to budget, I guess what people, let me just get to the bottom line here, Shannon, what people text me all the time is, you know what, instead of showing me the Aflac duck and Nick Saban, and instead of showing me the We Are Farmers guy and being your parents and Flo and all that, how about you cut the rates and quit advertising? But that's not the way the model works, right?
It's not the way the model works. And that is kind of the sentiment across the board, where insurance companies have a certain amount of money set aside just for advertising. It doesn't really take into account, it doesn't really impact how much you're paying for premiums or what the reserve is going to be in the event of a catastrophic loss. What's dangerous about a lot of the commercials is they make them so fun and happy, but they're not giving what policyholders need, which is accurate insurance information. It's not telling them how they can file a claim, how to read their policy. And policyholder education is a major kind of pain point because you think that you're getting insured for one thing and then you have a claim, and then you're not insured for it. And in Louisiana in particular, the car insurance rates are astronomically high. On average, drivers are paying $320 a month for full coverage car insurance. That's right under $4,000 a year. So people really deserve to understand what they're paying for and have carriers pay out in a timely manner.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. And by the way, Shannon knows what she wants. She's what she's talking about. She's a licensed insurance agent and a content writer for Bankrate. She got a Bachelor of Science from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, over 16 years in the insurance industry. So we'll talk, Shannon, when we come back. It would seem to me if things are getting more competitive, then maybe I shouldn't be so hesitant to make a claim because maybe they'll work with me a little bit more and not raise the rates out of fear that I'll go somewhere else. Maybe that's a false assumption. We'll find out when we come back. And if y'all have any questions about car insurance, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along when we return. Time for traffic now on WWL. 657, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend and fellow Louisianian, Shannon Martin, Bankrate insurance expert, about shopping around for better insurance coverage or sticking with the company you've been working with for a while. Somebody texted in and said, I had State Farm my whole life until maybe 7 years ago when I switched, and I felt like I was betraying my State Farm agent when I had to call and tell him to cancel my policy. Part of the insurance business is developing relationships, right, Shannon? But for them, it goes back to family and business. It's like, well, we're either a business or a family. You can't say we're a family when you want my business, but then say it's a business when I make a claim.
That's exactly right. You know, my dad is listening right now in Meadow, Louisiana. He's had the same State Farm agent, I think, for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels the same way. The agent knows him, knows his business. He's comfortable. He knows who to call in the event of an emergency. But if State Farm were to make a decision to no longer write policies in that area, his agent really wouldn't be able to help him. He would feel bad for him, but that won't cover his home and his auto policy. In terms of filing a claim with your auto policy, Tommy, you are right to kind of be a little cautious because if you do have an at-fault accident, if you have damage to your car where you're going to make a collision claim, you file that claim, it will be surcharged on your policy, you know, 9 times out of 10, unless you have a special endorsement where they might waive the first type of accident. So you will see an increase to your rate, and it'll last for about 3 years. So if you have something happen to your car that's small, like someone keyed your car, theft, vandalism, something that you're able to kind of maybe fix a little bit yourself and it's no big deal, sometimes that can help keep your rates down. Usually comprehensive losses don't count against you, but let's say you kind of hit a pothole and ding your door or something like that. That's something you can live with or fix on your own. That might save you more money in the long run than actually filing that claim.
So I'm not crazy. It's not just me to have car insurance and be terrified to use it.
Right. It is not just you because insurance is getting more expensive. But the key here is if you're in an accident involving another person where liability may need to be determined, where someone can put in
That's where you need them. Yeah, Shannon, we're out of time. I want you to come back, all right? This has been fun. Thank you. 7:14 now on this Wednesday morning, September 17th. Hurricane season quiet for the next 7 to 10 days, which takes us to September 27th. And then we're getting October. We're going to talk to Barry Keim at 8:15 about the Azor High and maybe La Nina. And my mind won't wrap itself around a hurricane season kicking up in October just in time for a Halloween hurricane. Although it has happened, I forgot the name of the storm, but I remember cleaning up when it was cool and the power was out and watching a football game on, I guess, with a power cord from the neighbor's house. But either way, highs today of 89, near 90. It'll be that way all the way through Tuesday. No chance for showers until Wednesday. And then only a 35% chance for showers. Let's talk about carbon capture in Louisiana. Greg Upton is our guest. He's our friend, always here to help us, the director of LSU Center for Energy Studies. How you doing, Greg?
Doing great. Good morning, Tommy.
All right, let's talk about carbon capture and solar. And it would seem as though the more environmentally friendly thing would be solar, but that's going away, and the carbon capture, which would be maybe the least environmentally friendly, or maybe not, maybe it is environmentally friendly, is moving ahead. Now that I've set the table, have at it, Greg Upton.
Sounds good. Yeah, so a few big developments over the last few weeks with carbon capture. Of course, about a year and a half ago, Louisiana received primacy from the federal government to permit Class 6 wells. And so that's a lot of course, jargon. Let's break it down. So whenever you want to permanently sequester carbon dioxide underground, and so, of course, we have these sources of emissions of carbon dioxide that come from these industrial sources. These companies are interested in not emitting those into the atmosphere. And so one of the technologies that can be used is to capture that carbon dioxide at its source and then transport it to a location for which then you would drill a well that looks very similar to an oil and gas well. And to the kind of average Joe, they wouldn't probably know the difference. But instead of extracting the oil and natural gas from the ground, as we're used to in Louisiana, It's going the opposite direction, where you're taking that carbon dioxide and you're permanently sequestering it or storing it underground. And so Louisiana has been moving forward with the permitting of these. And in the last 2 weeks, the first Class 6 well permit was issued by the Department of Energy and Natural Resources. So that's a big deal. There's about four other projects that through an internal memo at the department that are kind of the next ones that they're looking at doing somewhat quickly here. And so some have told me probably by the end of this year or into Q1 of next year is a likely time period where we might see a few more of those Class 6 wells being permitted. The one that was permitted, it was in Cameron Parish, and it is attached to an LNG facility. And so when you export natural gas in the form of liquefied natural gas, part of the process is to get the natural gas to almost 100% pure methane, and that's what you need in order to go through that liquefaction process. Because there's some carbon dioxide already embedded in that stream, and they have to extract that out anyway. And so because they're pulling the carbon dioxide out of the process anyway, it's just part of the normal process. Instead of emitting that, what they want to do is permanently sequester that. And, of course, what's the benefit to the company? There's the 45Q tax credit from the federal government. And also now they're able to sell this liquefied natural gas as this lower carbon intensity natural gas. And so that's what's happening on the CCS front. On the solar front, what you're seeing is that we had the Inflation Reduction Act, which was, of course, passed under the Biden administration, that extended tax credits for both wind and solar power generation. And so it's a bit of an apples and oranges with CCS, and then instead of talking about some industrial source of emissions like we were talking about with CCS, now we're talking about electricity generation. And so the subsidy, of course, was to subsidize wind and solar, that you would have reduced emissions on the grid. And with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, I call it OB3 for short, what we saw was that those tax credits were sunset early. So construction now has to begin before July 4th, 2026, and a solar project has to be operational before the end of 2027. So over the last 2 years, we've actually seen a lot of solar build out, about 10 projects in Louisiana for about 1,000 megawatts of capacity. So that's pretty good. We had a lot of projects that were in the planning process. But my prediction is the projects that are going to come online, that were going to come online over the next year, 2 years, those will probably continue to move forward. But all of the projects that were in planning to come online after that end of 2027 date, those projects are really going to be stalled, and they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and kind of refigure out those finances now that those tax credits are no longer available to them. So, yes, so we're seeing CCS ramp up and solar slowing down.
Is solar economically feasible without subsidies?
That's a good question, and the answer is sometimes, okay? Mm-hmm. So you know, you might think of these big industrials that we're talking about that want to lower their carbon intensity. Some of those are willing to pay a premium for a renewable energy source. It's a low carbon intensity energy source such as solar. Some of these projects could just be economic, just dispatching on the grid and signing what's called a power purchase agreement. And some of them probably are not. And so I think we're going to continue to see some solar build out, but I think that the rate at which we are going to see it is going to be slower than in a world where the Inflation Reduction Act continued moving forward and those tax credits weren't sunset early.
So many questions pouring into the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Don't ever text and drive, please. I'll pass them along to Greg Wiegenbach. Keep in mind, Greg is not an environmentalist. He is an economist, but we'll pass the questions along that apply when we return. I have a ton of my own. 721, time for traffic on WWL. 726 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday morning, September 17th. We're talking to Greg Upton, our friend, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. Greg, I know you're an environmentalist, you're an economist, but generally speaking, I'm getting a lot of texts from people, and they're asking if I can make an amalgam of all of these. Where is the carbon going? Because is there a hole in the ground, or did they take something out of there that they're putting the carbon in? And they're also very concerned about seepage or it coming out of the ground. Somebody else wants to know, and then I'll turn it over to you again after my big, long Bobby Hebert question. What about, they said it's a way to produce more oil, but I don't know that that's true or not. Talk about all of that.
Yeah, sure. So the first question, where is it going, is a good question. So you imagine underground, when you go thousands of feet underground, and you're talking, I think the zone that this first one is 5,000 to 10,000 feet below the ground. So that's going to be 1 to 2 miles underground. And you've got all the sediment. And within that sediment, there are these tiny, tiny, tiny little pore spaces. And so geologists estimate the amount of area, if you will, within those pore spaces, and you might hear the terms porosity and permeability are one of the core things that geologists look at for oil and gas. You know, what is the space and what is the oil and gas that's within that space in order to extract out? It's the exact opposite of that, where now you're looking at that same kind of tiny, tiny, tiny little spaces between the sediment that now you're going to put the carbon dioxide under there. And so the question about, is it seeping out? So there's a few things that that they're going to do in order to look at this. Number one is there's all these geological models that have to be submitted to the department for them to look and see if that is a good place to do carbon sequestration. And so there are the applications are quite literally 1,000 pages long. They're required to do all this test, all this analysis. And then when they drill the sequestration wells, they're also going to drill within proximity of those wells that are able to be sensed.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Your life isn't one size fits all. Every day brings something different. Your style should too. At Maurice's, we make it easy to show up feeling comfortable, confident, and completely you. Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look your best. From tried and true denim to head-turning looks, we've got styles that fit your life and your budget. Fashion made for real-life moments. Maurice's.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Wow!
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
To see if that carbon dioxide is moving to a location that it was not intended on moving. And so that's the, the process for which they go to. Of course, is it possible that you'll ever have an incident where the CO2 moves outside of where it was intended? Like, absolutely, that could occur.
But if it would, Greg, and I know you're not an environmentalist, would that be a toxic situation, an evacuation situation, or would that be just the carbon that you tried to capture is back in the atmosphere anyway?
Yeah, so if it were to move up into the water table, which is way shallower, whenever the CO2 reacts with the water, it can create what's called carbonic acid, and that process you would not want to occur within the water table. And so communities have a lot of legitimate questions about that and the protections in place. The other place that is a risk is in the transportation of the carbon dioxide, not in the sequestration, but in the pipeline itself. Mm-hmm. And there was an incident in Mississippi for which there was a landslide and a pipeline ruptured with that landslide. And there were a few dozen people that went to the hospital because the carbon dioxide kind of displaced the oxygen in the air. Mm-hmm. And this, negatively impacted those folks that went to the hospital. So those are, the two biggest risks that people are concerned about and are legitimately asking questions about.
Greg, you made it simple as always. Thank you, sir. Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. We're going to take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola, about the mother of Brian Vasquez, that 12-year-old that just went missing and was later found dead. And it's just a terrible, terrible story. But we'll talk about the charges the mother faces and her current legal situation with Dane when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we'll go to Dave Cohen. 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on this Wednesday morning. It'll be hot but dry and the tropics are quiet, and we'll take it, right? And matter of fact, we're going to talk next hour with Barry Keim, LSU health meteorologist, and about the Azor High and what's keeping the hurricane season so quiet, and La Nina and the likelihood of it. Hurricane season getting more active in October, which would certainly seem atypical, but we'll talk to him about that. Dane Cialino joins us now, our friend, professor of law at Loyola. Good morning, Dane. How are you?
Just fine, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. I just want to warn the audience, you're about to hear two of the most brilliant legal minds in the history of the country. Just kidding. I always like to make you laugh, Dane. That's the only reason I bring that up. Right. Let's talk seriously, though, about this Vasquez case, which is a tragedy on all accounts. A lot of people want to know why the mother isn't charged with murder. And take us through the legalities involved here. And I guess it comes down to what you can you can think one thing, but it doesn't matter what you think. It's what you prove, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, in order to be charged with murder under Louisiana law, the prosecution would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she had the specific intent to kill or cause great bodily harm to her child. And they certainly could not prove that. So it's not an intentional killing. It is unfortunately an accidental one. And as an accidental killing, it fits most cleanly as a negligent homicide. because a reasonable person wouldn't have supervised this now deceased child the way his mother did. And because a reasonable person would have done it differently, her departure from that standard of the reasonable person, gross departure, amounts, at least according to the prosecution, amounts to negligent homicide.
Can you go in a little bit of what that gross departure was, what she did that the reasonable person would not have done? Or what she didn't do that the reasonable person would have done?
Yeah, it's essentially a culpable omission because she did not do what a reasonable person would have done, which would have been to take reasonable efforts to secure the house to make sure that the child couldn't wander out, particularly when the reasonable person would have known that they were close to water where the child could drown, or if she was aware of the alligators in the pond, that the child could have been the victim of an alligator attack as he was. So those are the reasonable things that a person would have done, a reasonable parent would have done, that she didn't do, that are the essentially the culpable omissions that she's being charged with.
Where does the past history of her and this child fit in?
Yeah, as a technical matter, whether she failed to care for him in a reasonable manner in the past or not is not an element of this offense, but it's certainly something that motivated the prosecutor in this case the police in their charging decision, because she had essentially neglected the child before, and that informed their decision making on whether this was a gross departure. It also, there'll be, I'm sure, a squabbling at trial about this, about whether or not that prior bad conduct on her part is going to be admissible in this trial, and the prosecution is going to argue that it is indicative of a pattern of practice that should be admissible, and it's not just an effort to paint her as a bad character who deserves to be punished.
Would that be admissible if it goes to trial?
Well, that's going to be a fight, and there always is a fight on what's called prior act evidence. 404B evidence is the technical term from the Louisiana Code of Evidence, and it's all going to bear on whether or not she was negligent. So I would think that the judge is probably going to let it in, but there's certainly going to be motion practice on it.
And as far as the criminal, the definition of what she's charged with, we'll get into this when we get back. The defense attorney said that at worst this is a major mistake. It's not a crime of violence, but I don't know if she's charged with a crime of violence or not, and what the state definition of the law says that she's charged with. I think she's in a world of trouble, and in my opinion, it's just my opinion, not Dane Cialino's, I think rightfully so, because this is just a tragedy what happened to that poor young man. 7:50, 10 till 8, more when we come back. Traffic, WWL. Hi, 7:56, 4 till 8, talking to Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola University, our friend who always helps walk us through these complicated legal issues, about what it is that Hilda Vasquez is charged with. What exactly is she charged with, Dane, and what are the definitions of those laws?
She's charged with negligent homicide and second-degree cruelty to juveniles. And you know, oddly enough, the crime of second-degree cruelty to juveniles carries a much more severe potential sentence than negligent homicide. You could only get 10 years for negligent homicide, but an offender can get up to 40 years for second-degree cruelty to juveniles.
So people would say, why not first-degree cruelty to juveniles?
Well, that crime doesn't exist. Louisiana Criminal Code, there are lots of, quote, second-degree crimes that usually involve as a material element that the defendant caused great bodily harm to the victim.
All right, if you keep the score at home, that's one brilliant legal mind, not two. What kind of time is she looking at?
Well, up to 10 years, a minimum of two, since a child under 10 is the victim of a negligent homicide, if she's convicted of that, and then up to 40 years if she's sentenced for second-degree cruelty to juveniles. So these are obviously very serious felonies that she's looking at, even though it's not murder or manslaughter.
This has nothing to do with Hilda Vasquez. I want to be clear about that. This is a hypothetical case. But if a parent decides to do away with their child and puts the child in a situation where the child could be harmed and then turns their back for a moment or wanders off for a moment or leaves the child alone for a moment, especially if it is a special needs child, that's no excuse, is it?
It's not an excuse, but it wouldn't be probably a crime because if someone just is guilty of ordinary negligence, that would be a tragedy, a tragic accident, but not a crime unless it's a gross departure from the standard of a reasonable parent.
Compare and contrast with leaving a child in the back seat of a car, if you would, Dane. And that I don't know how that applies to the law and sometimes the discretion of the district attorney, right?
Yeah, and we have that sad discussion every summer, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't recall any happening this summer.
Thank God.
Exactly. That is a crime that when it occurs, prosecutors look at all the facts and circumstances. If the parent really was just absent-minded on this one occasion, that falls into the tragic accident category. But if the parent is going inside of a casino to gamble or drink or doing something that makes the whole episode look more culpable for the offender, that's when we see the criminal charges.
Thank you, Dane. I appreciate it as always. Have a good day.
You too.
Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola. I always like to make him laugh by calling myself a brilliant legal mind. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to Barry Keim, LSU health climatologist, about the Azor High and why it is that hurricane season's been so quiet and La Nina and the possibility of October becoming more active. And then we'll talk to Ed Chervenak about last night's mayoral debate. A lot coming up. Stay with us. Tommy Tucker, WWL. 8:16 now on WWL. Behind him lay the gray Azores, behind the gates of Hercules. Before him, not the ghost of shores. Before him, only shoreless seas. I remember that poem from when I was a kid. That's the only thing I know about the Azores. Here to help us sort all of that out about the Azor High and so forth is Barry Keim, LSU health meteorologist. How you doing, Barry?
Hey, good morning. It's good to be here.
Tell me about what's going on with hurricanes and the Azor High, and what is the Azores?
Okay, well, the Azores are a group of islands off the coast of northern Africa, and it's just a reference point to talk about where the high pressure is out over the Atlantic Ocean. And by the way, I mean, the Azores High, the Bermuda High, it's essentially the same thing. It really just depends on which side of the ocean you grew up on. We call it the Bermuda High. The Europeans tend to use the term Azores High much more than we do.
I got you. So how did this come into being, or when did it set up occupancy in the Atlantic to turn all these hurricanes, and did it just turn them, or did it also decrease the activity that was occurring?
Okay, so the Bermuda High, Azores High, it's a feature that's always been out there. It's it's what we call, you know, semi-permanent, which is kind of an oxymoron, but it's always out there. It's very potent, big, burly in the summertime, and then in the wintertime it tends to shrink and contract and become a shadow of its former self, but it's still out there. So and it's really important during hurricane season, especially early in the hurricane season, because the hurricanes basically track around the Bermuda High. And depending on where exactly it is, it has a big impact on whether it sends the storms into the Gulf of Mexico or whether they turn up the East Coast. So if the Bermuda High is big, burly, ridge a little further west than normal, we're going to see a lot of activity in the Gulf. Just so happens this season, it's kind of weak and ridged a little further to the east on the eastern side, you know, more towards Africa and Europe. And as a result, the storms are getting spun up and sent along the, you know, out into the Atlantic Ocean or up the East Coast, and they don't really make it into the Gulf of Mexico. So that's the season we're having so far, and I don't think anybody in Louisiana is complaining about that. At least I hope not.
No. So a weak Bermuda or Azor High is good for us, because I get confused with La Nina, El Nino, what's good, what's bad, weak, strong. A weak Bermuda High is what we want to keep the storms out of the Gulf.
Absolutely. And we've had it so far this season. It's been a wonderful thing. I went back and looked at some of the history. You know, I was trying to find another season that looked like this one.
Mm-hmm.
1951 and 1952. If you want to see two seasons, so, you know, that shaped up very much like this one is shaping up so far. I mean, the season's not over by any stretch. So let's not write this season off yet. Okay. But if it continues on the path that we're on now, I mean, if we keep seeing these East Coast storms, go look at 1951 and 1952, and that's pretty much what's playing out. That was a very weak Bermuda high that year. It was ridged further west or east than normal, and as a result, all those storms went up the East Coast or stayed out over the Atlantic, and virtually no activity whatsoever, certainly not in the northern Gulf. So hopefully that pattern continues. Now, another thing that I think is worth mentioning as it relates to the Bermuda High is, you know, the Bermuda High is very potent and, like I said, burly, if you will, broad over the Atlantic earlier in the summer season. And it starts to fade as we get deeper into hurricane season. And as a result of that, you know, we tend to see more of our storms earlier in the season. And we have a long history of these, you know, these major hurricanes hitting us, like Katrina and Camille, that usually come on the front end, you know, before we reach the peak of the hurricane season. We get fewer of those major storms on the back end. But as we get deeper into the season, it tends to be more Florida and East Coast as we get into late October. And I've said this many times, it's gotten me in a little bit of trouble, but we've never had a major, well, let me rephrase this. We've never had a tropical storm or hurricane landfall in Louisiana in the month of November. So that just shows you as we get deeper into the season, those late storms tend to be more down in the Caribbean or up the East Coast, and the Gulf tends to get quiet at that time of year. So once we get through October, I pretty much write off the season, but just realize the probability is not zero in November. It's just very low.
I seem to remember, what was the storm that happened in October where I think a storm came late in October. I remember it was cooler when I was cleaning up, and also afterward with the power out, it wasn't too bad. Which one was that?
Oh, gosh.
Maybe we had 5 years ago?
We had Zeta, I think, was one of those. That's probably one of those late October ones. And you know, of course, going way back in time, 1985, and I know you were around back then because I was too.
Oh yeah.
We had Hurricane Juan that basically was, you know, doing loops along our coast around Halloween. So we've had them all the way to the very, very end of October. We've had a few of those occurrences, and you do mention one that was very recent, and it was one of those numbered storms. As we got into the Greek alphabet, and I think it was Zeta, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
that's what Tim tells me in my ear. It was Zeta, and it was pretty cool. Actually, it was. I don't mean cool as in a nice experience. I mean the weather was cool, and it wasn't that bad. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Barry, you got to be careful what you say, right? Exactly. Sitting on the radio saying hurricanes are cool. No, not at all. 8:22 traffic now. WWL. 8:28, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Barry Keim, LSU health climatologist, talking about the Bermuda Azor High, whatever it is. When you said 51 and 52, does that mean, Barry, that it's a 2-year thing, or what determines whether the Bermuda High is weak or not?
Well, we do have some seasons where it seems to be perpetually weak, and again, when we get most of the storms up the East Coast. Just by dumb luck, I think we had 2 years in a row, and even 1953 it was very East Coast and the eastern part of the Gulf Basin. Nothing on the western side of the basin.
Let me cut to the chase. I'm trying to look ahead to next year and wonder if the Bermuda High is going to be so I don't worry all off season, because I do sometimes about hurricane season. Any indication that it'll be low? And also, before we let you go, I want to talk about the La Nina and stuff forming, because you got high pressure systems coming down with cold fronts in October, right? Which also tend to push the storms to the right, as I understand it, or to the east, or prevent tropical formation in the Gulf. Take me through all of this, please.
Okay. Do not count on 2 years in a row of East Coast storms. It could happen. I mean, it happened in 51 and 52, but don't count on that again.
Okay.
There is a pretty decent chance that we could get a La Nina as we move deeper into the fall and towards winter. That would be bad news in that it tends to create very favorable conditions for more storms to form on the back end of the season. And yeah, we certainly don't want any of that. Although if we do get those, they're more likely to be Caribbean storms or East Coast storms. Mm-hmm. I don't want to write us off, but you know, anyway, as we get deeper into the season, like I said, I kind of write the season off after October for Louisiana. But with a La Nina, there's certainly a chance that we could see a busier back end of the season than we've seen in the front end. It's been pretty quiet really up to this point.
What would La Nina mean for winter?
For winters in Louisiana, that tends to be warmer than normal and drier than normal as the jet stream gets deflected to the north and all the storm tracks are further north, more in the midwestern part of the country, leaves us high and dry and hot.
But we don't know if that's going to happen yet.
No, I think the last time I looked was about a week ago. They had about a 40% chance that would happen.
All right. And when somebody texted in, what day does the snow fall in January of this year?
Thank you,
Barry.
That's another one I wouldn't count on.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. I don't know if we want to count on that. 8:30, we'll take a break for news, and then we'll come back, talk to Ed Chervenak about the mayoral debate last night. Here is Dave Cohen on WWL. 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly to our friend Ed Chervenak, professor of political science at UNO, my alma mater, I'm proud to say, to talk about the mayoral race and the mayoral debate specifically last night on WWL-TV. How you doing, Ed?
I'm doing fine, Tommy. How are you today?
I am okay, sir. Thank you. Tell me what stood out to you last night about the debate.
Well, I think, you know, for the first time, there was actually some real fireworks in the debate. I've attended about four or five of these forums throughout the city, and they've all been fairly civil. But yesterday, I got a little bit testy during the WWL-TV debate.
So what did we learn anything? Did any candidate gain any ground or lose ground?
You know, it's really hard to say with debates, you know, because it's the people who watch debates, they have some baseline interest in politics already. And if they're well informed or they're loyal to a candidate, the debate's not going to make a whole lot of difference. Only if their loyalties are weak, if they don't have a lot of information about the candidates, then people are more open to new information and may be influenced by the debate.
Has there ever been any research that shows, and I'm going to even presidential debates here, generally speaking, when it comes to political science, because people watch debates and they pick winners and losers, but does that affect who they vote for?
Most of the research tends to show that there may be some effect on the margins, maybe anywhere from 2 to 3% of people may change their vote as a result of the debate, but it's more about images, you know, perceived competence or likability.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to last night, did anybody hurt their chances or improve their chances? Let's take them one by one. Helena Moreno.
She seems to be fairly consistent in her approach and her discussion of the issues. I don't think she's been hurt very terribly. She's very popular. She has a 53% favorable rating. So, even if there's, you know, something at the margins there, she's not going to be hurt too badly.
How about Royce Duplessis? How would you gauge his performance?
Sometimes it tends to be more about trying to define Councilmember Moreno than it is about what he wants to do. That's kind of reflected in the polls. 44% of people really don't have an opinion about him, and another 16% don't recognize who he is. So he think he needs to do a better job of boosting his name recognition and defining himself rather than the other candidates.
Is this all about – oh, and let me get to Oliver Thomas, too. I don't want to ignore him.
Yeah, Oliver, he's as steady as they come, and his numbers have been steady. He's been about 16% in the polls. I don't see a whole lot of movement there as a result of the debate.
Is there any way to indicate, I don't know if they've done any polling, about why Oliver Thomas isn't doing better, or is it his past that's maybe hindering him at all, or is he seen as part of the old guard? I'm just curious about that.
I think you probably hit a couple of points there that he, because of his past, because of his conviction, there's probably a segment of the electorate, and I don't know how big or how small it is, that will just refuse to vote for him. And that he does seem to be running kind of a throwback retro campaign, talking about, you know, what they did in the 90s and what worked. And I don't think people are interested in that. I think people want to know, what are you going to do in the 21st century, not what you did in the 1990s.
And I watched the debate, and there were some things that kind of, I guess here's where I'm conflicted at, in that the bar is so low, right, in terms of what a new mayor can do. But are voters looking at that bar as being low, or are they looking at this as a chance to make, or I don't know if any polling's been done on this, a chance to make really substantial change in the city, or just make it better than it was?
People are looking for substantial change, that a lot of people feel we're at a tipping point and that we need to get this mayoral election right, or we're going to continue to spiral downward. People will continue to leave. Services won't be provided to citizens. And so people think that this is an important election. And they're looking to the mayor to direct this change. It is a strong mayor system. And so the mayor has lots of authority, lots of power. And so they expect the mayor to perform.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. 8:50. Interesting conversation with Ed Shervinek, our friend, professor of political science at, I'm proud to say, my alma mater, UNO. 10 till 9, traffic, WWL. 8:57, 3 till 8, couple of minutes left with Ed Shervinek. We appreciate his time, a professor of political science in my alma mater, UNO. Ed, with first of all, I don't know if you're supposed to talk about this or not, but does UNO have any polls coming up that we can look forward to?
We're actually getting ready to start a poll on Saturday the 20th. So
okay.
We'll probably have some results in the next couple of weeks.
And I'm guessing we don't want to talk about any more of that, any more than that, because we don't want to bias anything, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Let's talk about, if you had to, with the, being a New Orleanian and the political science knowledge that you have, if you had, from all the polling data, if you had to say what the election is going to turn on, it would be what? What are voters most interested in? What is it likely that's going to elect the next mayor? What issues? Or is it personality?
It's a combination. Certainly it's personality, whether you like that individual, whether you have a favorable opinion of them or not, and whether you think that they are competent to do the job, are able to fix the roads, get the drainage system to work, boost economic development, deal with affordable housing, and, of course, there's always the crime issue and dealing with public safety. So it's a combination of personality and the policies that these people want to pursue.
Is crime that big of a deal? Because, you got President Trump with the National Guard, and I see a new poll out that says crime is not the top concern of people in the city, and we all know about the numbers going down. You heard Ronald Surpass maybe during the news saying that. And I see a story here about a road rage incident in Arizona where one brother ran the other over, and you go back to Cain and Abel, and Ronald Surpass quoted the Bible. I'm not bringing you into all of that, but you're never going to make crime go away 100%. And is that anything that really people are concerned with when it comes to this mayoral race, or is it more about the city actually working?
I think probably for the first time in a long time, I don't know if crime is not the top issue. It's always a major concern for people. Mm-hmm. But really, people are looking at City Hall to make sure that they get the system to work properly.
So
that
after
government
the
is working for them, that government is providing them the services that we require to be a healthy community.
And I'm guessing after the poll, we may have a clearer idea as to if we have a winner after just one election or not.
Well, we have to look at a series of polls, and, we see Councilmember Moreno holding her support. Her numbers have been pretty steady, and she seems to have a little bit of momentum. And so we'll see if she can continue that momentum.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate your time and your insights, as always. Talk about Ed UNO. Hello for me. I know you'll do that.
Will do. Have a good day, Tommy.
Thank you, Ed. You too. Ed Shervinek, professor of political science. Proud to say my alma mater, UNO. Newell Norman, graduated from UNO. Diane Newman, boss lady, graduated from UNO. We're proud of that institution. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk about cutting the cord and streaming services and more. There are no dumb questions. Text them in, 504-260-1870. No texting and driving. Thank you, Dave. We're going to talk about streaming services now. And let me tell the audience, there are no dumb questions, because I don't think you'll find anybody that knows less about this than yours truly. With that, we welcome in our friend Courtney Jackson, CNET streaming editor. How you doing, Courtney?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How are you?
I'm well. Good to talk to you again. Tell me about CNET for people that don't know.
So CNET is a digital tech publication that we specialize in tech coverage. So anything having to do with devices, services, artificial intelligence, we cover pretty much every topic in tech.
So let's talk about, I guess, first thing, I don't know if we've spoken to you since this happened or not, about the Disney-Hulu merger. How does that affect streaming services that people are getting or might get?
So that is supposed to take place officially early next year when Hulu is completely integrated into the Disney Plus app.
The deal was struck in June, I should have said.
Yes. So so if you're already familiar with the service and you already have both services, you'll have noticed that they already added a Hulu tile to the Disney Plus platform. So
Wait, you can already watch. What? A Disney tile?
A Hulu tile.
Hulu tile.
So there's a button. If you're already inside Disney Plus, there's a little hub button that says Hulu on it. So you can watch Hulu content inside the Disney Plus app already. If you're subscribed to both services. But what they're doing to change that with the new integration, they're going to eventually shutter Hulu as a standalone application and merge it completely into Disney Plus.
Really?
They haven't said, yes, correct.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. I get excited.
No, that's okay. That's all right. we don't know about pricing yet, how, you know, if that will affect what you're currently paying, but that's what the plan is, and it's supposed to roll out early next year.
So the little green Hulu is going to go away. The tile, would that be a tile?
It will probably still stay on there. I'm not sure. Bob Iger has spoken that there will be some revamping of the Disney Plus app design a little bit, but
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Your life isn't one size fits all. Every day brings something different. Your style should too. At Maurice's, we make it easy to show up feeling comfortable, confident, and completely you. Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look your best. From tried and true denim to head-turning looks, we've got styles that fit your life and your budget. Fashion made for real-life moments. Maurice's.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
All we know is that they plan to integrate it completely. so far.
So as it stands now, what does Disney Plus consist of?
You get all of Disney Plus's content. So that would be, and this is the on-demand service. So you can watch Marvel. You can watch content from all the Disney channels, like the Disney cable channels. Disney's vault of content, which is, you know, all the cartoons and animated stuff that you've watched as a child.
Bambi, if you want to watch Bambi, you can watch Bambi on demand. Okay.
Yep, you can watch that on demand, as well as all of its newer stuff, like the new Moana movie, the live-action Lilo and Stitch, and then National Geographic and some of their other Dancing with the Stars, I think you can watch live on there now as well. So that you can get it bundled, you can get it as a standalone thing as it stands now. But again, early next year, all that is supposed to change.
Are you a big fan of Dancing with the Stars, Courtney? I got to ask.
No, not personally. No.
Yeah, me neither. Never seen it. Never really cared to see it. That's just me though. So does Disney Plus include ESPN as well, or is that a different package?
You can get ESPN bundled with Disney Plus, and it'll save you a lot of money, actually. So it's that, too. It has a tile of special hub button on the Disney Plus app if you're subscribed to both services only. If you don't have ESPN at all, then you won't see that button in your app.
See, that's what confuses me and I think a lot of people, and I'm getting text on this, because how in the world do you go about crunching the numbers as to what's the best deal? Because you don't know who owns what. If you get this and add that, you can get the package and the bundle, but the bundle you might already have because ESPN might be coming in on something else, right?
That's true. So, and I will say, since the new ESPN streaming service launched last month, you've been able to get it in a bundle not only with other Disney-owned brands, because Disney does own ESPN. And Disney owns Hulu. But you can also get it bundled with one of Fubo's new services. You can get it bundled with one of DirecTV's new packages. And soon it'll be bundled with Fox One, and that rolls out next month.
And then there's subdivisions from that, because ESPN, if you get it on the cable, if you still have cable, well, there's ESPN content that's not included on the cable, that's included only on the streaming service, right?
Correct. Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, man, I don't, would you begin with an audit, Courtney, of sitting down and just, I guess, first of all, figuring out what you watch and then figuring out what you subscribe to and see where there's overlap, like with Venn diagrams almost?
Yes, you know, it's so funny. I just did this with a family member a couple of weeks ago.
Did you use Venn diagrams?
I didn't have to. I just said, what do you all watch? And so sports is needed, but not necessarily RSNs. We start with what you're already paying for.
RSN? What is that?
RSNs. If you're a sports fan, you may want RSNs, which is a regional sports network. That gives you access to all the local games.
All right.
On your broadcast networks. So some people care about those. Some people don't. They're fine with just watching national games versus locals. But that may matter if you're a hockey or a baseball fan. So think about that if you want sports, because this could be a deal breaker in terms of what services you want. But then you think about how much you're willing to pay each month. So we've had several price hikes this year on streaming. Netflix raised its price, Peacock raised its price, a couple of the live streamers raised their prices as well. So you have to sort of think about how much you're willing to pay maximum every month and then take it from there.
Let me go back to Hulu. You can get Hulu, or at least things that are on Hulu, from a couple of different sources, can't you? That further complicates this to me.
Not really. Hulu has a lot of original content. So, and again, that's a Disney-owned brand. So you get all of the ABC programming, some Fox programming, and then again,
you
some
see, there
original.
You go. Some Fox programming. There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
A little bit of Fox. Yes, correct.
So
it's complicated.
It really is, and it's easier just to turn the damn thing off, I think, and read a book. But that's not what we're talking about here. When it comes to, somebody texted in, and I think we can address this before we take the break for news. Just take the break. Difference between YouTube and YouTube Plus. One you pay for, one you don't?
So plain YouTube is accessible to anyone for free. If you're talking about YouTube Premium, That's the subscription service.
Oh, YouTube
that
Premium
they offer.
Is what it's called. Okay.
Yeah, and this is not a TV service. This is just regular YouTube. So not YouTube's live TV service. Just regular YouTube. They offer plans for you to be able to watch YouTube without ads. So I don't really hear too many people who use that service. I rarely hear from people who use those services, but yes, it is an option to pay for one of their premium plans to watch YouTube ad-free.
All right, so let's take the YouTube family here for a second. So you can go, you got a TV and it's connected to the internet, so you can go to YouTube just like you can on a computer, correct?
Correct, yes.
Or on any device. So then there's YouTube what? Premium, which is what?
YouTube Premium, again, it's like if you like to watch the music videos or some of the other content they have on there, YouTube Premium allows you to watch it without any commercials. So it's the same thing you see on YouTube at any time, just no ads at all.
So is there also a YouTube service that provides other networks and other programming, or is there any original programming that comes from YouTube or not?
No, so YouTube TV is a separate offering. That YouTube TV is a live TV streaming service, but regular YouTube that everyday people just watch stuff on, no, there's no original programming from YouTube itself, just whatever content creators you watch on there.
Is there original content on YouTube TV?
No.
Okay.
No, that operates like a cable service. And they do offer some on-demand movies, you know, in addition to that package. But no, other than that, no YouTube originals.
So now we got YouTube TV acting like a cable service, which is going back to cutting the cord that we were talking about initially, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to let my eyes deglaze, Courtney. Okay, I don't know how you keep this straight. Good luck to you. And if y'all have any questions about streaming services, content, et cetera, there are no dumb questions. This, to me, is extremely complicated, far too complicated. I'm getting ready. Courtney, you can address this when you come back, because I like old movies, okay? And mm-hmm. I studied film in college, and I love old movies on TCM. And that's one of the few things I watch, and I sit down and I try to audit. Well, what do you really watch? And when I do have time to watch TV, generally I'm looking for a good film noir from the 50s to just kind of escape everything and just get lost in that world. So I'm thinking about getting rid of all the streaming services and keeping only cable TV. You can address that, pardon me, when we return. We're talking to Courtney Jackson, our friend, CNET senior streaming editor. Text me at 504-260-1870. Let me know what it is that you subscribe to. What streaming services do you have? Which overlaps do you have? What questions do you have about getting the best bang for your buck? Because it can be terribly confusing with this one having that content and that one having that content. Courtney, I also want to talk to you about regulation when we come back. And is anybody regulating this? And are we eventually going to wind up with Disney TV and only Disney TV? 922, Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. Trying to sort through the maze of streaming services, which it can be. Courtney Jackson, our guest, our friend, CNET senior streaming editor. Courtney, somebody texted in and said, just for an example, networks that'll have college football if you want to watch every game this season, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, FS1, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN+, SEC, SEC+, Big Ten Network, mm-hmm. TNT, ACC Network, blah, 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 blah. So I guess at some point you got to decide. You can't, first of all, you don't have time to watch it all, do you?
Some
right?
people do. I'll say if you're familiar with the schedules, if you know most games are on a certain day of the week, like Sunday or a Thursday, then you can absolutely make the time to watch it. And the other thing is most live TV streaming services offer DVR, so you can always record things and watch them later. So
say that again about the DVR and streaming services.
You can always record the games and then watch them later. Cause the majority, if not all the live TV streaming services offer at least unlimited DVR.
Really?
Yes.
So, for example, Hulu lets you record a program?
Hulu with live TV. So not regular Hulu, but their live TV streaming service, which costs $83 a month. Yes, you can record content, and they offer unlimited recording.
$83 a month? Do you get a car with that?
No. Right. But you get free ESPN, the streaming service, and you get free Disney Plus along with it.
Have you seen The New King of the Hill or not?
No, I have not.
There's a line in there where Bill Dottery, if I don't want to give anything away, says, I got to the end of Netflix, and at the end, I watched all of Netflix. At the end, there's a wellness check involved, which I thought was pretty funny. Somebody texted in and said, I pay for YouTube and no commercials. It's awesome. We watch every day. Somebody said, I have used all the services from Spectrum to AT&T to Hulu, all of them, and try them all. And I've landed on YouTube TV for the past 5 years.
Okay.
And they are great for the cable-type service with all the networks. So what you're saying is, what they're saying is, it's basically a cable service, but that's streamed. Would that be accurate or not?
So it's different from, it's actually a cable replacement. So
cable replacement, okay.
Yes, so a live TV streaming service like YouTube TV or Hulu plus Live TV or Fubo, they are contract-free, number one. With cable, you have to sign a contract. And you also have to pay extra fees for the equipment and whatever other fees that they tack on. With a live TV streaming service, what you pay for is what you pay for. There are no hidden fees. There are no contracts, no long-term commitments. You can cancel whenever you want to. So YouTube TV is one of them, and that's one of our highest rated ones. They offer a lot of channels, and so we do recommend it for its channel selection. Hulu with live TV.
Wait, say that part again. Courtney, just now what you just said?
They have a really great channel selection, YouTube TV.
YouTube TV, okay.
Yes.
And that's how much?
That one is $83 a month.
Okay.
Hulu with live TV is the same price, $83 a month.
So how are you defining live TV there? What does that mean?
So it's just... They're just telling you to differentiate it from the regular on-demand Hulu service. It's Hulu with live TV.
So what's the live TV part of it?
It's the cable replacement. So you get those lineup, all those channels that you name, ABC, NBC, Fox, all of those.
Local broadcast as well?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Comes with all those channels and more. So you get your TBS, your TNT, your BET, VH1s, all those channels.
Do you get Disney Plus with Hulu and live TV?
You do. You get that included with your package.
Getting that with YouTube TV, are you?
No, you're not. That's the difference. So you get a little bit more with Hulu because, you get the new ESPN streaming platform and Disney Plus at no extra charge.
But you're not getting Amazon, you're not getting whatever programs you want to watch on Netflix, you're not getting whatever programs you want to watch on Paramount Plus, et cetera, correct?
No, you have to pay for those subscriptions separately.
Courtney, you're killing me. Somebody texted in, what is Sling TV all about?
Sling TV is our budget choice for live TV programming. It doesn't have the same amount of channels as a YouTube TV or Hulu Plus Live TV, so you don't get your ABC and your NBC, only in a limited amount of cities. But Sling is a great budget option for the channel lineup that they offer. So they have three plans. They have Sling Blue, Sling Orange, and then they have one that's a combination of both of those packages.
So somebody texted in and said, YouTube TV lets me record anything. It records every NFL game and every FBS college game that's on regular TV. Can also record shows and movies. Live TV is watching stuff that's but they said something about TCM, but YouTube TV doesn't include TCM, right? If you want TCM, you got to get that on cable.
No, so it's because it's a cable replacement, it pretty much has all the same channels as you would get on cable.
You're talking about YouTube TV now?
Yes, YouTube TV. Okay. So if you go to their site to try to sign up or if you're interested in checking them out, what you do is plug in your zip code and that'll let you know which channels are available in your area. But for the most part, they have all the most popular channels that people are looking for.
Somebody texted in and said, is there any way that you can check content by category? If for whatever reason, I guess you want, as it relates to streaming services, I know each streaming service has a, would that be Tile that you click on, Courtney, or am I going to hurt myself using these words?
I'm trying to understand the question.
In other words, like they have, you know, they got a drama, comedy, horror, et cetera, that you click on for each streaming service, right? If they got, if you put on Netflix, it gives you a choice of what you're looking for. Would you call that little thing a tile that you're clicking on? I'm just trying to get the nomenclature right.
So, no, if you, when you open up any streaming app like Netflix or Peacock, they'll have a menu in there, and the menus is where you could choose what genre you're looking for. So if it's a comedy or drama, that's where that's located.
So I guess what the text was asking is if they like one thing more than the other, or is there a way to go in and search like a list of shows as you like. Basically, what it's a long text, but I'm trying to consolidate it. I think what they're trying to say is if you list the shows that you like, is there one clearinghouse website where you can go in and search and say, okay, these are the shows I like. What streaming service has them?
Yeah, you can check a site like Just Watch. That's a separate app. Just Watch has that information. TV Time has an app that can help with that, and as does Real Good. Real is spelled R-E-E-L-G-O-O-D.
Give me those again. Real Good, two E's.
Yes.
The other one?
Just Watch.
Uh-huh.
Or TV Time.
So when it comes to somebody texted in and said that you have to have cable to have TCM, but if you have YouTube TV, that's not true, is it?
I'm not sure if YouTube TV carries TCM. Where you can find TCM content is on HBO Max, because that Warner Brothers Discovery owns TCM. So
but now that's a different streaming service.
Exactly. Yes.
Is anybody regulating any of this, and is it likely that we're going to all be streaming stuff from Disney before it's all over?
I don't know for sure, but streaming services are less regulated than broadcast media. They do, as far as like mergers and business deals and acquisitions, they are overseen by the FTC, you know, and the SEC, just to make sure everything is on par. But as far as, you know, whether this will continue, what we're going to see in one mega company, I don't think that's going to happen.
So with YouTube TV, somebody texted in, is it really, well, you don't know this, so I don't know. They wanted to know if you can call up movies by demand on YouTube TV, or is that just HBO Max?
No, you can. YouTube TV offers that as well. They do.
Okay. For extra charges or not?
It's included, but they have a limited selection.
Okay, so when it comes to YouTube TV, you can get that with or without commercials?
Because YouTube TV operates like cable, it will have ads in it.
Okay.
Yes.
So if you have cable and YouTube TV, you're really wasting money. Accurate?
I wouldn't say that. Well, okay. Both, yes. If you have both, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I would pick one over the other. Yes.
Okay. Let me pick it up when we come back. Interesting as always, confusing as always, and it makes you, again, just want to get an antenna and rabbit ears and wish yourself good luck. Courtney Jackson, CNET. Senior streaming editor. We'll talk about some of the streaming services. I don't know how you describe best content, but maybe, Courtney, we can break it down to if you like this, then this might be the streaming service for you. 939, 21 till 10, traffic, WWL. All right, 945, quarter till 10, a little bit of time left with our friend Courtney Jackson, who always helps us, tries to help us. She does her best. It's up to us to sort through the different streaming services. Courtney's a CNET senior streaming editor. Somebody texted in and said that it's amazing that this lady can keep up with all of that. How do you keep up with all of that, Courtney? How do you not just have your eyes glaze over? Because there are so many overlaps and so many different, I know it's your job, but how do you do that?
Well, it's my job. And then number two, I've been a cord cutter for over a decade. So, I have to stay tuned in and plugged in to what's going on in the industry. It's constantly changing.
That's the other thing that makes it so. But the good thing about streaming as opposed to cable is there's no equipment other than, and of course, people are texting in. You do have to have internet service, of course. But I don't know of anybody that doesn't have internet service now. So if you're going to have access to the internet, you may as well use it for TV. It's no more internet charge to use other than depending on the, I guess, the speed of your internet. It's no more to use a streaming service on your internet, is it?
No, we did the math on that, too. We crunched the numbers, and generally speaking, streaming is still going to come out cheaper, even with your internet package.
All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, now, somebody says, where does a couple of different texts asking, where does DirecTV fit in all of this?
So DirecTV is one of the more expensive live TV streaming services. They have their satellite cable operation, which is separate from their streaming offerings. But in terms of streaming, they offer RSNs if you're a sports fan, and all the channels that YouTube TV and Hulu's service offers. It just costs way more. I will say, though, they launched a few months ago a new suite of skinny bundles. So what that means is they have a $70 sports package. It's under their genre packs. If you go to their site and click the shop button.
Do you hear that, Courtney? That's me beating my head against the microphone.
Oh.
Skinny bundle. What is it?
Skinny bundles. We'll have to talk about that another time.
Oh, Lord in heaven.
But skinny bundles are basically slimmed-down streaming offerings. They cost less, but they also offer less channels. So if you don't want 90 or 180 channels, you can get 60 channels for $35 or something like that. So DirecTV is great if you need RSNs in your sports streaming package. Fubo is the same way. So, but they cost way more than YouTube TV or Hulu with live TV.
So when it comes to somebody texted this question, and I think it's interesting because it's a very subjective question, but it does go to the heart of the matter, and it is YouTube TV a better option than Dish Network? But that depends on what you're looking for, skinny bundles, et cetera, right? Is there any way to determine that? And that's what ultimately Courtney comes on to try to help us with, is to decide what's best for you. And I guess the for you is the key part of that?
Yeah, that's the key part, what your household needs. Dish Network is satellite cable provider, but they also own Sling. So if you're looking to cut the cord, Sling is a service offered under Dish Network.
What about a Fire Stick? What is that? Somebody wants to know.
Fire Stick is an Amazon device, and you plug it into your TV, and you load it up with all of these streaming services that you want.
So that it's a tool. It's not a streaming service.
No, it's not a streaming service. It's Amazon's device, just like Roku has a Roku Stick.
Mm-hmm.
And all you do is plug it into your TV. Most of them come with pre-installed streaming apps like Netflix and Hulu. You have to pay for your subscription, but the buttons are already on there. You sign up and you stream on there. We recommend either the Fire Stick or the Roku Stick because both of them do come with voice-activated remotes, which is perfect for someone like you, Tommy. If you want to just hit that button and say classic movies, it will pull up suggestions for where to stream classic movies.
So in addition to having it already loaded on the TV, I would want to get a Fire Stick or what was the other one?
A Roku Stick.
A Roku Stick, because it would then give me a different remote option. Am I getting this right?
Yes, you can have the voice remote that comes with those devices.
Is there truly an a la carte package, somebody texted in, where you can pick and choose whatever you want? But that's not the case, right? I mean, you got to either stream or you don't.
Yeah, those don't exist. But what you can get right now is just a bundle. Like Disney offers a bundle that comes with HBO Max. There's a Stream Saver bundle from Comcast, if you're a Comcast customer, that offers Netflix, Apple TV, and Peacock in one bundle. Those are pretty much as a la carte as you'll get outside of just signing up for these services individually.
Do you look into, do you guys deal with types of TVs or what comes on them? Because in addition to streaming services, I don't know what you call them, but there are Roku Network, there are networks that are built in with the TV that you get for free with the commercials, of course,
mm-hmm.
but that comes with the TV, right? So
yes.
Do you guys look into that at all?
We do. They're preloaded. Those streaming apps are preloaded into most smart TVs. So mm-hmm. whether you buy a Vizio or a Samsung or an LG TV, the majority of those are preloaded with the apps. All you have to do is just pay for your subscription.
Mm-hmm. So, but when it comes to what are the TVs, ONN, or I don't know the names of them, or different ones like that, mm-hmm. is it about reception? Is it about picture? Is it any more about pixels? Or are all the TVs pretty much the same? Or is it now more about what is preloaded into it, or are all pretty much the same? What would you advise somebody, I guess, Courtney, if your dad were to say, I'm not looking for a TV, but if somebody were looking for a TV and it's like, well, now I'm going to get this big 70-inch TV that I've always wanted, what would you advise them to do?
So we actually have a group of TV experts on the CNET team who test those TVs in a lab. They have a full-blown mm-hmm. lab. So they look at not only picture quality, but how the TVs are constructed, pixels, some of the TV science that goes into creating those TVs, the size, and as well as budget. So we offer lists for best smart TVs, best TVs by certain brands. So if you're looking to buy a particular Samsung model, we have lists for those. But we have two colleagues at CNET who really go through, take those TVs up and down and around to test them and to offer the best buying advice.
That's at CNET, CNET.com, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Now, real quick, somebody texted in about, and I got to be careful here because people sometimes try to trick you, but is there something called Superbox on Amazon?
I've never heard of that.
Okay.
No.
Any final thoughts, Courtney?
I want to advise everyone to always consider free streaming services like Pluto TV and Tubi mm-hmm. if you're on a budget. And because it's NFL season and you want to watch those live games, you just keep in mind that you want channels like CBS, ABC, and Fox. You can find them on a live service like YouTube TV or Hulu with live TV.
Let me get this in real quick. Somebody texted in about sharing and how many people, if you subscribe to YouTube TV, how many people get to log on to that? Is it one person only? Is it geo-fenced? How does that work?
Let me see. I can't remember off the top, but I can tell you. Hold on. So YouTube TV, there are, let me see how many screens.
So it's amount of screens, not people?
Yeah, screens per account.
Okay.
I can't remember off the top.
You know what? If you can find it and just email it to me, I'll pass it along later. All right, Courtney?
Okay.
We're out of time. I can't tell you how much we appreciate you. Courtney Jackson, CNET's Senior Streaming Editor. Thank you. Have a lovely day.
Thank you. You too.
We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got for us when we come back on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to a 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by Street Easy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow, Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.